Pep Talk is about to begin. Hey, 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 come on in.
Welcome back to Buckeye Talk. I'm Nathan Baird from Cleveland.com, along with Doug Lamorese and Stephen Means. It's sort of a bittersweet episode of Buckeye Talk. One of the things that we look forward to all season when you cover Ohio State football is after the Big Ten championship game, if they win, there's an open locker room. One of the only times all season you get to experience that. And everybody who's in there is available to be interviewed, as opposed to the usual very controlled interview scenarios we find ourselves in. And so every year we do a draft. And even though the game isn't happening this year, we're going to do that draft for you as a discussion of the most interesting players on the Ohio State football team right now, because this is always a good indicator. Like, if you have free reign of anybody in that locker room, who are you going to first? Who are you going to second? This will be, I think, a really fun conversation. Before we get to that, though, some news around college football that we think affects Ohio State football in the long run. Steve Addazio was fired today as Colorado State's head coach, recording this on Thursday. He was there for two pretty unsuccessful seasons. 2 years ago, Tony Alford was rumored to be a candidate for that job, and Urban Meyer was a big part of the hiring process, and he steered them towards his former assistant coach, Steve Addazio. And I would expect Tony Alford to be high on the candidates list that Colorado State looks at this time around. Doug, does that seem to make sense to you?
I mean, I think I would expect Colorado State to look at Ohio State's assistant coaching staff. They've got to look at Corey Dennis, who was originally going to be the quarterback's coach at Colorado State 2 years ago. And his father-in-law got his friend the head coaching job at Colorado State. He's going to be like, and then take my son-in-law to be the quarterback's coach. And then Ryan Day was like, hold on right there. We're keeping Corey Dennis. Rising star in the profession. If Marcus Freeman's good enough for Notre Dame, then I think Corey Dennis should be good enough for Colorado State.
But tongue-in-cheek, obviously, but I think one of the best things going for Colorado State right now might be that Urban Meyer's hands are kind of full, which they weren't a year ago. He doesn't have time right now to help Colorado State hire a coach.
So listen, schools react. When they do something wrong, they react the other way. And it's like Addazio was, hey, he's been around. He had just been fired as the Boston College head coach. He'd been on big-time staffs or whatever. And for whatever reason, they didn't want to go with the alum. And then that guy came and sucked. So I think then you react the opposite way. And beyond being a former running back at Colorado State, Tony Alford is very qualified for this job. So that makes a lot of sense to me. Kevin Wilson, I think, was in the mix for Colorado State last time also. Again, that Kevin Wilson gets sometimes his name thrown in for things like that because he used to be the head coach at Indiana. So, yeah, I would – Ryan Day better have the name in his drawer of who he wants if Tony Alford leaves, because certainly that could happen.
Stephen, what is the recruiting impact if Tony Alford were to leave during this coaching cycle, this hiring cycle?
All the progress you've made, you have to press restart set on, because none of it matters anymore. Richard Young, Justice Haynes, Treyon Webb, you know, all of that. It's out the window. You got to press the restart. Now, I understand, and I say that in understanding that Ryan Day doesn't necessarily do the same things that other head coaches do, where he allows his assistant coaches to handle the recruiting and he maybe comes in more as a closer. He's in there from day one, but still, that's Tony Alford is why Trevion Henderson and Evan Pryor here at the same time. It's the reason why they were going to be able to do it again in 2023. And so, Tony Alford did just go see Dallin Hayden, a 2022 commit who will be signing on December 15th. He went to go see him. So up until this moment, there was no worry that Tony Alford might be leaving the staff. But now this is hoping. Yeah, if he does end up, that's probably the only way he leaves is to be Colorado State's head coach. And if that happens, that's a big time recruiting hit to what Ohio State wants to do here. Ohio State's got a lot of big time recruiting hits happening over the last week and a half here.
I don't know if Colorado State would be the only job he would leave for, because there may be other head coaching jobs at that level that come open. But it would certainly be, I think, the most prominent one for him just because he was a star there. I think it's a place that is a big deal for him. Doug, with Steve Addazio, he's a guy who has extensive Urban Meyer ties. He hired Ryan Day to be his offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach. If something were to happen, if Greg Strudrabo were not to return, if Kevin Wilson were not to return for whatever reason, do you think that makes sense to bring him to Ohio State?
I mean, there's two former Urban guys without a job right now in Steve Addazio and Dan Mullen. So I don't know. Does Ryan Day want to keep hiring Urban guys?
I mean, but it's a guy he knows too. It's a guy who hired him.
No, I know, but Addazio is an Urban guy. He's in the Urban Mafia as much as anything.
Well, so that's how he got to Colorado State.
That's right. Addazio just makes sense because you're probably going to need an offensive line coach. But I agree with Doug's point. At some point, you can't just be in the Urban Meyer Mafia. At some point, you got to do something on your own here.
Which is fine. I mean, Addazio is probably one of those guys who's very qualified to be a position coach. Probably was out of his depth as a head coach, but. Maybe, right? You look for connections. So maybe, but I think Ryan Day, this is based on nothing, is probably interested in continuing to branch out on his own.
Yes. The other thing that made me give it some credibility, and again, this is all just speculation, including Tony Alford being in the running for the Carlos A job. It isn't like public at any point yet. But Ryan Day has also talked about like the concept of sort of balancing a veteran coach with a younger coach. And Addazio could be a guy who comes in as a veteran presence to balance, because they did it even last year with Combs and Barnes a little bit. They had done it previously with Madison and Halfley. So on the offensive side of the ball, would they look at something like that? That's just what made me think of it.
But honestly, I think Addazio might be a better candidate for like a Paul Rhodes job. Come be an analyst.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Rehab yourself for a year. Come back to a big time program. Get around it again. You know, back off a little bit. And you know, you're not recruiting, you're just doing film stuff. And then, for instance, if there would be a change anywhere else on the staff, and say they would go with somebody a little younger than you have Addazio in the building, I think that might be more feasible than Addazio as an assistant.
Anything else on the national level we need to get to before we delve into this? What is usually one of our favorite moments of the season? We just don't get to actually participate in it.
Well, again, I'll tell some Marcus Freeman stories later on, because Marcus Freeman's going to open his coaching career in Ohio Stadium on September 3rd, which is going to be bonkers. And again, I'm old enough now that this is like coming around. It's that Marcus Freeman, that group of guys, that senior class who came back in 2008, those were the guys that, I mean, I started in 2005. So those were the first guys kind of followed all the way through their career. And I knew pretty well, James Laurinaitis, Marcus Freeman, Alex Boone, Brian Robisky, you know, guys like that. And that Marcus is here is not a surprise, but it like blows my mind a little bit too. So we'll have plenty of time to get into more Marcus Freeman as we go down the line. But I just would like to say, again, that's to make it clear, we like to do the draft. People listening to this are sad, not because we don't get to do our draft and then go in the locker room, but because Ohio State is not playing for a Big Ten championship. So let's have a little context of like, it's not about us. There are thousands of people listening to us, and they can tell us to cram our draft up our cram holes. That's not the point.
I think it's bittersweet all the way around. And probably even there may not even be any sweet in it for the people listening.
There's nothing sweet about this.
99%
nothing sweet about this. Buckeye talk.
The fact that we don't get to talk to people in an open locker room is so far down the list of what people care about. I just don't want people to turn off the podcast because it's self-centered sports writer mumbo jumbo. The other thing is, I don't know that we're 100% of the locker room would have been open in the lingering COVID era. I don't know that they would have had a bunch of reporters stuffed in a locker room there. So it might not have happened anyway.
That's actually a fair point.
Yeah, the only thing that's the 1% of this that is sweet is I think people always like to talk about like who might be the next guy up, who might be some of the future stars here. And that's what some of this can do. It gives us a chance to talk about that.
It's just an exercise to do that. It's not actually important who we would. It's an exercise to talk about interesting young players on the team. Yeah. But again, the point of this is back in the day, it's like Ohio State was playing to like make the playoff. And I was like, I get to talk to Tate Martell. And I was like elbowing people out of the way to get like a 12-minute Tate Martell interview in the locker room of the Big Ten championship game. I did the same thing with Matthew Baldwin, right? I mean, it has traditionally been an absolute opportunity for unfettered access to guys that you kind of talk to for a year.
So we are each going to draft 4 players that we would try to talk to. And usually there is an hierarchy in this exercise. Again, doesn't matter for this year, but you know, you want the guy you want most goes at the top. And then it's like, if I have enough time to get to number 4, hopefully I do, but we're going to talk about them all equally today. I'm going to pull rank and go first here. Which do you guys have a preference if you're going second or third?
Wow. So
let me guess who you're taking first.
How many people are in the top tier of guys I really, really want?
Three or four. But even those three or four are not equal.
I don't know. It might be a long list. I think it might be six.
Oh, mine's two. So, okay.
Yours is two?
Mine's two. And then there's a drop off.
Okay. What do you guys
want? Just very quickly.
I'm writing down a number.
This was Nathan's idea. So he's hosting. I pull rank on this podcast all the time. And the fact that I speak for 78%. I'm trying to think of the time I just pulled rank in a draft. It was like, I'm picking first. So I'm just throwing that out there. So This is Baird's show.
I pick my battles. All right. I've written down a number. You guys each pick a number, whoever's closest, without going over. No, whoever's closest.
All right.
Is it between like a number or is it just whatever?
Between 1 and 10.
Oh, okay. I was going to say 8,467. I'm glad you said between 1 and 10. I'll take 5.
6.
It was 4. So, Doug, you can have the second pick. And, Stephen, you will be third in this exercise. Yeah, I mean, I'm taking Quinn Ewers, first of all. And it's one of those things where he may end up being the only person I end up talking to, depending on how long he'll stand there and talk to us. But he's the most fascinating player on the roster going into this offseason. And there's a lot we don't know about how this season went for him. Everything kind of unfolded behind closed doors. We heard little bits and snippets here and there from Ryan Day about, well, he's starting to figure out like where he's supposed to walk. And, well, he sort of has friends on the team now. And we saw him hand off twice at the end of the Michigan State game. But it's been a pretty sheltered season as far as like from the prying eyes of the media for Quinn Ewers. And I would love to find out how he felt about this year. Does he feel like it was the right decision in retrospect? Does he like the place where he's at going into the off season? What's he feeling like about the competition next spring? What has he learned from this first season? There's any number of fascinating topics about Mr. Ewers. And I think he's the obvious number one choice. Was anybody else going to pick somebody else first?
Farts, no. That's why you pulled rank for the first time in the history of Buckeye Talk. What are you talking about? You better bring it. If you're going to take Quinn Ewers, your story better be awesome, and your questions better be awesome. Fake story, since it's not happening. No average Quinn Ewers stuff here. This is go time. By the time I was done talking to Tate Martell that day, we were brothers. So that's it. Like, you got to get real with this guy, because this kid is going to try to sell you some kombucha or whatever he's selling. And then he's going to tell you a lot of, well, you know, I just try to get better every day. So you got to get in there, man. You maybe better grow a mullet out before the game. You got to establish some rapport. You have to start, maybe put a little twang in your voice. I don't know, man. You got to get in with Quinn Ewers, because it's time to get real with that guy.
I think the one thing I've learned in the higher rated player they are, the more dull they are to personality. So sometimes you got to pull stuff out of them because they, you know, so that's what I'm like. If they're the number one player in the country, they have a number 35 million personality.
What I was thinking about doing was getting like my senior pictures from 1996, where I had a pretty sweet Illinois waterfall working back there. And I could have that made into a t-shirt. And I would wear it like under my, you know, the clothes that I'm wearing to cover the game. But once we get down to the locker room, I would just unbutton it and open it. And then we would have that connection from that point on.
See, I respect it. So you earned the number one pick with that kind of approach.
I was thinking ahead. I'm two steps ahead of this.
Good luck.
When was the last time there was a player of that?
Tate.
Tate. Yeah. And I was the only one who got him in 2018 because he just happened to try to sneak out. And I just happened to be walking out with him. It was a great day.
I invented locker room interviews with Tate. So
with Tate,
when you were in college, I invented this. By the way, people used to go around at the Big Ten championship, and you know what they used to do in the locker room?
Talk to the
Big
stars.
Talk to the people who had good games in the Big Ten championship game. So I'm glad you got Tate walking out the door, but this is where Doug makes his money. So
I can't think of anything less important than talking to the guy who just had a big game, who's probably in the other room getting interviewed at the podium anyway. You're going to get somebody's going to transcribe that for you. I'm going to go talk to the guy who didn't play all season and ask him how he feels about that. Anything else?
Go ahead and take the other one. Yeah, no, Doug, no. Let's just get the Doug taking the other one so we can So this can be fun.
Yeah, but this is why you're the one. You said there's six guys in your top tier. It's no, top
that's
tier
why
two.
I said let's get fun. So this can be fun.
So I'll take a McCord because you got to find out like where his head's at. So that's what this is about, and it's not about what he's learned. It's about where he thinks he is, where his head's at, the pecking order, the competition, how he thinks it might unfold. But anything, you know, that he's been, whatever. I think you have a chance to get, I think you have a chance to get a little real with him, because you can talk about, you know, you're sort of kind of put in a tough spot in the Akron game, and then you've, you know, had some opportunities the rest of the way. But did you think, so I think you would have, to Steven's point, Steven, you're right. There are times when it's like some guys who are super highly rated don't really want to talk. Kyle McCord's had enough experiences. Quinn, who is obviously the first choice, is going to talk about whether he found where the bathroom in the Woody was. Mm-hmm. Kyle McCord like played and learned and whatever, but also Kyle McCord had a full year of like, all right, well, CJ's here. Now Quinn's here. Kyle is the guy getting pinched. So he's clearly the second choice. And I think you would have a shot at a good conversation.
Kyle McCord is a really good interview. And I've obviously gotten a chance to know him over the last couple of years here. He's an awesome interview. And yeah, to the point of, he played, and it was a point in the season where people were saying, we want to see another quarterback. Well, he's the quarterback everybody wanted to see, and he didn't really seize the opportunity. And it's been kind of downhill. Like, he hasn't really flashed much, even in the small opportunities he hasn't been great. And so what does that mean going forward in the future? Yeah, that will be a great story. One, because, you know, I think the people at Cleveland.com tend to ask really good questions, but then also when you mix that with a good interview, you get a good story typically.
You hit the nail on the head, Doug, where it's like, where is his head at? Because in so many ways, this season unfolded exactly how he might have expected. I mean, he comes in, he competes for the starting job, didn't win out. And I'm not saying he would have, that's obviously not what he wanted, but CJ Stroud wins the starting job, the guy who'd been here for a year already, and goes on to have a pretty good year. McCord does get to play, but then now you're sitting in a situation where you're pinched. Like, Stroud is really probably settled in as the starter for next year. You got Ewers coming in like a shooting star behind you. Where are you? Like, what are you thinking about? How are you thinking about things going into the spring? We all assume this goes through the spring, but what is the mindset that you are you taking into the spring as this guy? And we'll be frank, like, anybody who we think is like on transfer watch is always at the top of this list. And we usually don't like to speak that into existence with most players, but we've made an exception with the quarterbacks here because both Ryan Day and the quarterbacks themselves have put that on the table from day one, just by the realities of this situation. So we got to know what's going on with him.
Yeah. To that point, Jack Miller would have been third. He's a third. If he's still here, he's the third pick.
No, he's not.
To that point, I think he might be.
I wouldn't have picked him third.
Everybody would know he was leaving, and he's fourth in the pecking order. Yeah. What's interesting about that?
Well, now it is your pick, Steven. Who are you taking third?
Emeka Ebuka. We haven't really talked to him. We talked to him after a game, but that's not really the environment, you know, especially, I mean, we talked to him after a game because he had two awesome kick returns, but that's not really the environment to get a real story on the kid who was the number one wide receiver in the 2021 recruiting class and spent this year in a small role showing why that was the case. And now he's going to be one of those three starting receivers next year when Chris and Garrett are leaving, and it's going to be him, Jackson Smith, and Jigba, Marvin Harrison, and Julian. And that's very interesting.
The thing to me is, if this actually had been a Big Ten championship game that was played, if he had been not listed as unavailable again and then didn't play again, I want to know what's going on with that too. So there's both like the long-term view on Egbuka and the immediate, like, what's up? Why aren't you playing?
Well, but the playing is like returning kicks mostly, right? I mean, that's where.
Yeah, but he was the best kickoff returner in the Big Ten, arguably. He's a weapon in a way. It's not just like he's DeMario McCall back there. No offense to DeMario.
So the thing about when we're doing a draft like this is part of it is recognition. I'm going to read your story of naming a headline. Guy's the guy that people are interested in. And then the second thing is conflict. What is the conflict of this person? And so I had Emeka Ebuka seventh on my list. It's a good pick, but I don't think there's as much conflict with him. It's like, hey, what's your deal? It's like, oh, I'm going to start next year. It's like, cool, okay. Well, how'd this year go? It's like, well, I was learning and I returned kicks and I learned that. But there's just, I think there's a couple more guys that have more conflict to it because he's on track. There's no, now, if you think you know, sort of Nathan, what you're saying, if you think there's something to this, but like, I don't know, what would the thing be to it? Like, you know, it's not like he's in a doghouse or whatever. Like, he's fine.
No.
So I have a couple other guys who are either maybe in more conflict or maybe even more unknown than Emeka Egbuka that, to your point, Stephen, heard, you know, heard from him once after a game. I haven't really gotten to talk to him that much, but people have some idea of him. And so he would have been like a second or third round pick for me. But he's the, people did that stuff.
Yeah, this is not really conflict, but it is like there is something to, if we think that they're going to lose Garrett and Chris and be okay, but like, you know, there is small amount of what if they're not, you know, and I think that matters a little bit when you're replacing two All-American caliber players where, I mean, one of the guys, Doug, you wrote a story with the word Heisman in the headline with him. So that there is a small percentage of it, but it does matter.
But that's not a personal conflict within the player. Nah. Emeka Egbuka cannot answer, are you going to be as good as Garrett Wilson in the locker room of the Big Ten championship game? Again, the idea of like guys who are like, hey, what are you doing? Like, are you happy? Are you mad? Or like, who are you? We have literally not seen you since you got here. I'd have a couple more guys like that. Maybe I should have had Egbuka a little higher than seven, but three's a good pick. I mean, he's in this next tier for sure. Nathan, where'd you have him? Did you have him pretty high on your list?
No, more like in your range, really right around that sixth, seventh, somewhere down in there.
Okay.
And only probably that high because I was, again, keeping that sort of like immediate what's going on with you thing in mind too. And you get two pieces of content out of it instead of just one. And that's always important. Cleveland.com/OSU. We're going to take our first break here. We're going to come back and continue the fictional post Big Ten championship game draft here on Buckeye Talk. All right, so we didn't discuss how we were going to do this. Since I pulled rank, should we do the snake draft? Snake. So it goes.
We don't usually
takes longer
snake.
To get back around to me.
We don't do snake here. Okay. I don't think we've never done snake. I don't think have we.
We have, but only when it's like actually building a team or something like that. You know what I mean? Where some competitive balance is important. That doesn't really come into play here. So I'm going to take Harry Miller with my next pick. It's just been sort of an enigmatic situation all year with him. And I want to get more as much, see how much he will be forthcoming about the actual details of where things went wrong and how much those are going to linger and what his mindset is and his preparation is for being ready for 2022 and where he fits in now, just because you've had now a whole season of Luke Whipler. You had a year where Matt Jones established himself as like the number six guy. You've got Donovan Jackson coming up fast. So where does Harry Miller fit into this offense and what's next for him? He was just a guy that I've been very curious about all year. And on top of all that, as Steven said, you know, you're going to get a good conversation out of it.
You guys are too much in love with Harry Miller. He's not even on my list. Go talk about Shakespeare. I'm great.
He's not on my list either. I think I get your point with the you know, where does he fit in thing. But I mean, some of that might just be because he was hurt. So they picked some other guys. This could easily just simply be Harry Miller's a starting center again in 2022. So that's the only reason he didn't make my list.
Or starting guard.
Yeah.
I don't want to have no more Harry Miller off topic conversations.
So I'm done with it.
I don't want to talk to him about all that stuff.
But you said he's a good interview. He's going to be too good of an interview.
No. It's not. No, he actually. No. He actually is a good interview when you keep him on topic and you ask him real questions about football. That was the thing that I learned in fall camp. The problem is when everybody else wants to ask him about all this eclectic interests, which is fine. But when you actually, you know, hammer him down with football stuff, when we started asking him about the Michigan State game and some of his issues last year, he's very good at that stuff to the point of Nathan saying he's a good interview.
And he's a good interview when talking about his teammates, too. But
this
would be one of the only opportunities where you would probably ever get Harry Miller and only end up talking about football. And maybe all the stupid TV guys there asking dumb questions about whatever it is, you know, Harry Melville and the theory of relativity and whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, what you know what I'm saying? Like, this would be the one time you actually get to talk to Harry Miller for like 10 minutes about football. And
you get to keep him on track, man. And it's great when you can do that.
And I think he would be insightful about just the team in general this year and probably give us some good thoughts on that. So that's why he was high on my list. but also just for things relative to just Harry Miller, the individual, a guy who was a five-star and a guy who started last year and then who kind of just plummeted off the radar this year. Again, probably for legitimate injury reasons. Doug, your second pick.
Taking G. Scott, because I want to know about the transition, and let's have a deep conversation about you were one of the biggest wide receiver recruits and expectation for you, like what it's like, because at least time, I think, I can't remember what it was. It was after a practice along the way somewhere where we saw him like sort of having like a kind of hardcore conversation with an assistant. And I came,
Kevin Wilson.
And one day I came out and he, Alfred Wertz, conversation. I have enough little things like I wonder what this has been like for him when you are a guy who is practically a star recruit and now your role is completely changing. That metamorphosis, I am intrigued by. You kind of went into your cocoon that you could come out as a tight end. So I want to see what that process has been like. And I imagine he might be better.
He did deal with some injury this year. There were a couple games, at least one game where he was unavailable. But regardless of that, I think it's a great pick because he is one of the big unknowns, especially as you start looking ahead to 2022. No Jeremy Rucker anymore. And somebody's got to emerge as the best tight end on this team.
He was high on my board, very high for the exact reason you just played out there. I mean, we've talked, they want him to be the Jeremy Ruckert in the Jeremy Ruckert Luke Farrell pairing. And I mean, this was his year to kind of get his feet wet in being that. And then next year, they might need him to like actually be Jeremy Ruckert. So that mattered. And also, another really good interview because grew up around professionals. He'll give you really good insight and really good answers as well.
Really
so,
smart.
Yes.
Really smart.
Yes. Because even when we asked him before the season about why he ended up making this decision, he like went into detail. It was like Richard Sherman told him, hey, you should be a tight end. You know, he really went into detail about all that stuff. So it'll be interesting to talk to him.
Quick mark it down Friday here. Who is Ohio State's starting tight end on opening day 2022? And is he currently on the roster?
Cade Stover.
Wow, there you go.
There's like a 2% of me that's like, there's somebody in the transfer portal. Looking at Oklahoma, just like losing everybody. Maybe they go after one of those guys. But yeah, I'll say Cade Stover for now.
I think it probably is Cade Stover as things stand right now. Steven, your third pick.
Second pick.
Third pick of the second round goes to you.
Court Williams, what's up here? I mean, that guy got here. He was the epitome of a new position. They had raved about him his entire, you know, offseason, the weird offseason that it was. And then he tore his ACL. And then he really didn't get fully healthy until like 3 or 4 weeks into the season. And then once we got a chance to get out there and see him, he started doing stuff a lot and having these moments that made you think maybe he should be a regular in the rotation here and get him on the field. And if regardless of what Ronnie Hickman decides to do, I think he needs to be on the field next year. So I do think there is some room for it. But also another guy who's a really good interview, but there's definitely room here with Court Williams where it's like everybody's interested in what is up with that guy.
Hasn't he talked a couple times this year?
Once after the Indiana game because he like had seven tackles and scrub and garbage time.
On my list. Like I know the Court Williams. They're the most devoted guy they ever saw. Player. He was cut from an ACL this year, so he didn't play a ton, but he'll probably next year.
Yeah, I want to have a Court Williams conversation, but I want to have it with multiple members of this defensive staff, probably. I don't know how enlightening Court Williams will necessarily be, but I'm curious where they see him. I mean, I guess they see him as a bullet, but you've got Ronnie Hickman there now. There's just a lot of moving pieces, I feel like, on defense, and it may depend on who they bring in to lead this defense as to where these pieces fit in for 2022.
I have a handle on Court. There's more guys I don't have a handle on.
So my pick is up. I'm going to take another member of the secondary, I think. I'm going to take Cameron Martinez. I don't remember how recently we talked to him. If we talked to him after the season started. Didn't we talk to him after that? We had one good game, right?
We talked to him after he had the pick six, and I think we got him once during like the midweek.
Was that Tulsa?
Yes.
It was either Tulsa or Akron. And then, but that was like, not only was that the last time we talked to him, it was like one of the last times he was like on the field. Like he seemed like he was at this moment where he was moving and he was going to take a bigger role. And then the exact opposite happened. He became a very distant member of this secondary. It seemed like he was in the, I know that they moved him back and were using him as depth at free safety. That may have been the reason that they just shifted all of his attention to there. And they thought that they were covered enough at cover safety, no pun intended, that they could afford to have him focus there and not confuse him or whatever. But it just seemed like such a moment where he was having a breakthrough and was going to really contribute to this defense, and then just nothing. So I'm curious how he processed that and what they're telling him as far as who he is and what he is for this defense in 2022.
You guys are not going far enough off the board. Like you're picking people that we've seen. I have guys that like have not played at all that I am more interested in, but Cam Martinez was on my list because his situation seems to have completely changed since the last time we talked to him. He played cover safety. It was like, wow, you're great at that. We think you're going to play a lot of cover safety now. And then he stopped playing cover safety. And then he started playing deep safety. And it's like almost like talking to a new guy. We have never talked to deep safety Cam Martinez. So I had him ninth on my list. You're picking him seventh. So I think he's a good guy to talk to, but I just think there's some more deep sleepers here.
Yes. We've never talked to Cam Martinez free safety. Is he still a free safety? Is he a free safety in 2022 when they get Josh Parker back? Probably. And you've also still got Bryson Shaw. Like there's just a lot that I think is in the,
the question of like, why you were playing one position, you look pretty good at it, then you stopped playing that position and started playing another position. What's up? There is a lot there. Very specific conflict. There's conflict. And I do think, I don't know that he's a magic headline name, but I think he's close. Like, he has such a skill set. I think he's a very talented athlete that they're trying to figure out what to do with him. And that process generally is very interesting. This guy's a football player. So where's he fit? Because you think if you can get the right fit, he might be a playmaker. So I do think there's a lot there.
All right, Doug, give us one of your guys that is more off the radar.
So I have a couple guys. I actually have skipped a guy who I had ranked higher, but as the more I think about it, I keep moving him down the list. So I'm going to go. There's two guys that I think of as a pair, and I kind of wanted to get one of them, and I was going to almost wait for one of them to go, and I'll take the other, but I'll just take one. So I'll take Jordan Hancock at cornerback, because there are two young cornerbacks here, and there are cornerbacks leaving, and we think these are guys who are possible solutions. So Jordan Hancock, who was once committed to Clemson, then flipped to Ohio State. He was a higher rated guy than Denzel Burke, but he wasn't here in the spring. Those guys have had no role. Jordan Hancock had no role this year, but the idea of, hey, the program that you were once committed to kind of had a wacky year, man, now you're here. Now, what do you think? Like, where are you? What did you learn? What do you think your role is next year? He might start against Notre Dame to open the season next year. And he has like never played, and we've never talked to him since he was a Buckeye. So this is and he's like a top 50 national recruit. So this is a guy in the shadows that like when he got here, it was like, yowza, like this is a pretty big stinking deal to get this guy. He was a number 73 overall recruit. Jakalen Johnson was a number 50 overall recruit. I just took Hancock a little more because of like, you could also ask him about like, what do you think of Clemson sucking this year? But I think they're both good picks and they're both super. They were non-factors this year on the field, but I want to see what's up.
So let me just go, so we can just talk to this in the pair, and then because that's where I was going to go. I was going to take Jakalen Johnson because, I mean, I've talked to him, I've talked to his father, and their plan was to be the Jeff Okuda plan. This year, it's a special teams role at worst. Next year, you're starting or you're at least in whatever this, you know, playing three guys through two role is, and then in year three, you're an All-American and you're out the door to be a first round draft pick. And he didn't do any of that. One, because he spent the most of the season hurt with some type of injury. So that plays a role in it as well. But yeah, to Doug's point, the starting cornerbacks next year might be Jordan Hancock, Denzel Burke, and Jakalen Johnson. And we've talked to one of those three the entire year.
I think those are both good picks. They were like the next rung up on my list. For Jakalen Johnson, there's even like a sort of a a featurey thing I want to talk to him about. So he was the one that I had higher on my list than those
St.
two.
Louis,
I kind of went
St.
Added,
Louis stuff.
I had some St. Louis stuff I wanted to ask him about that I thought would be fun. Not just what you're talking about, Doug, but even some other stuff. And so I think both those guys are fascinating because Ohio State is still paying the price of the blip that it had in cornerback recruiting, right? I mean, you're still seeing that on the field. You're still seeing them put, Denzel Burke fixed it a little bit this year. I think you're still seeing the deficiency of those years.
I know what you're saying. Denzel Burke fixed it a little bit in terms of maybe they still didn't have stupendous cornerback play every snap across the board. But imagine if Denzel Burke didn't do what he did. Right. Like Denzel Burke did everything he could do for a true freshman who was ranked in the 200s or 300s. Like he saved their bacon this year. And it's just of all the times, there's a lot of stuff. Denzel Burke was 196. There's a lot of stuff that is making me feel old in college football right now and making me feel old and cranky. And the idea that we have gone so far down the road of early enrollees that now it's almost weird if you don't early enroll.
Yeah.
And it's
if you don't early enroll, you're sacrificing playing your freshman year, basically.
It's like, why? Like kids can't go to high school. You can't finish your high school year. Like that's out. You can't go to your senior prom. You can't play like your final year of basketball in high school. Like that's that's just not how it works anymore. I think there's a lot of stuff that we've gone down the road on in college football that seemed like a good idea at the time that now has become the norm that blows. And this is on that list. And so that it was so stark that, right, that Jordan Hancock and Jakalen Johnson did not early enroll, right? Mm-hmm. And Denzel Burke did. And the end game of that was one was a starter from week one the whole year, and the other two never saw the field. And I would hate, and it's fine. Like Jordan Hancock and Jakalen Johnson are fine. They will probably be very good players at Ohio State. But man, I hope they don't feel like, oh my God, I can't believe I decided to what? Go to high school for your entire senior year? Like, why are we there? Why is that the I'll write this down? Why is that the norm? What is so important? Like college football, they don't want you to go to the pros early, but they want you to get in early. Like they have to have your hands on you all the time. They don't like if you opt out of a bowl game, you're disloyal. But if you don't leave your high school basketball team, you're not trying hard enough. Like it's crap. And I'm just feeling a little bit because there's a top 100 recruit in my daughter's high school. It's like I've talked about it. He's leaving. Right. And it's just, I'm getting like an up close look of like, at just the kid. You know, it's Caden Saunders, who's a top 100 recruit going to Penn State, but he's just a kid. And like, oh, Caden's leaving. It's like,
you want to know why it's crazy?
Like, why?
It's crazy because so Paris Johnson went to St. X before he transferred to Cincinnati Princeton. And the only reason he transferred is because he went to a Catholic school that wouldn't allow him to early enroll. So he left the school he spent his entire career at, gave up a chance to win a state championship because St. X is typically really freaking good at football. So he could go to a public school just so he could show up early and then have that ruined by COVID. So it's not, he didn't even get the early enrollee experience. So he might as well have just stuck in at St. X and just showed up in the summer.
But like it started, and again, this is in the book, Dante Whitner was like one of the first guys who did it at Ohio State. It's like he did it. Dante Whitner was like a businessman when he was 17. Dante Whitner was like, I'm getting to the NFL in 3 years and I am hyper focused. So he came after Ohio State won the national championship in 2002. Everybody's celebrating. Who shows up? Nobody knows him. Nobody talks to him. Nobody will give him a ride. And he's like here as like the early enrollee, like the only guy here. And that's almost 20 years ago now. But he did that because like Dante Whitner was like all about business. I don't know that Dante Whitner was longing for the things he was giving up. He was like, I'm giving them up because I got a plan. And his plan made him a top 10 pick in the NFL draft and a Pro Bowler who's now an announcer. Like Dante Whitner's plan worked. But the result is Jordan Hancock can't finish his senior year of high school. Like why are we here? I don't know. It's like anything in life. If the answer is because that's the way it works or because everybody else is doing it, it's like, well, then can we reevaluate? There's a lot. I think college football has a lot of stuff right now. And it's not even tradition, like old guy. Well, I've been doing this since 1890s because this is new. I think we've gone too far. So, and now it feels like Jim Cock and Kalen Johnson vanished when actually they were just normal. But normal isn't good enough anymore. You've got to be accelerated. So I'm very eager to talk to both those guys. So I think they're two good picks here.
I hear what you're saying. And certainly there are academic students who excel to the point where they enter college early. But that's usually like such a rare thing that they're like, they're on the news about it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like this guy's 14, but he's enrolling, or she's 13, but she's enrolling as a freshman this year at wherever school. And like, it's so rare. But with football, the opposite is now the rarity.
And like with academics, they made a TV show about it. It was called Doogie Howser MD. Steven, please hit your middle-aged white guy buzzer. So that's
Quinn Ewers like stressed himself out to get one extra class. This would be, he could also show up not only 6 months early, but another 6 months early. And he's probably, Gavin Wimsatt did it at Rutgers. Like it's not, Quinn Ewers is not alone in doing that.
Well, but that's not even what we're talking about. We're talking about normal early enrolling. Yeah. Quinn Ewers got $1 million. So we're just talking about like, it is normal to graduate in December, show up in January and start your college life. And why? Why is that normal now? Because what? Because it used to be, well, it gives you an advantage. But now it actually turns out that it's normal and it actually puts everybody else who wants to be a high school kid behind. Mm-hmm. So I think that blows. And if the NCAA said, you can't do that anymore, what would be the downside of the NCAA saying, can't do that anymore? Guess what you have to do? Go through high school. Like, what if they said that? Like, what would happen?
I don't know how the NCAA can't prohibit a student who is done with high school from enrolling at the college. But
you can say that no mid-year enrollees may participate in spring football.
Mm-hmm. You can certainly do that. Yeah,
it might change the early signing day period too. Because the whole point of signing early is so you can early enroll. So if you take away that benefit, then maybe you see more kids take their time and not rush to feel like, you know, maybe Devin Brown or CJ Stroud, who are like blowing up late in their recruitments, don't feel like they need to rush and make a decision in 3 weeks just so they can sign and get on a campus.
But frankly, this is something that this is the kind of conversation that we should be having on the drive to Indianapolis, because then everybody that we talk to in the locker room, all three of us, can ask that question. Did you really enroll or not? And did you feel pressured to do it? Do you wish that you hadn't had to do it? Do you know what I'm saying? And then that's, mm-hmm. we can get an actual well-rounded piece out of it there. Cause we can sit here and talk about it as much as we want, but what do the players themselves actually feel about it? How many of them candidly would tell you, yeah, it was really a bummer that like all my friends got to go off and like finish their high school lives. And I had to come get, you know, ground into the floor by Chase Young or whatever, as a freshman offensive lineman, my first spring. Although I guess he left pretty early too. He wasn't here for a lot of their freshman springs either. So we're going to take another break. We're going to come back and finish this draft here on Buckeye Talk. Quick recap of the players that we've taken so far in our fictional post Big Ten championship game interview draft. Quinn Ewers, Kyle McCord, Emeka Egbuka, Harry Miller, G. Scott Jr., Court Williams, Cam Martinez, Jordan Hancock, and Ja'Kalen Johnson. And kind of along the same lines of guys who have not been heard from or and rarely seen, and it's a position of interest right now, intense interest. So with my next pick, I'm going to take Reed Carico, who was a top 100 prospect and would potentially be in the mix to play a lot of linebacker next year, except you've got everybody who played linebacker this year except Taraja Mitchell is coming back. And you've got two really highly touted prospects coming in behind. So what did he get out of this year? And where does he kind of see himself fitting in, either positionally or in just sort of the hierarchy right now at that position? Because it's the position that every fan on this team is asking us about right now. I tweeted something out last night, tweeted out the link to my story about Devin Brown committing, and somebody quickly retorted back, can he play linebacker? Because that's like, that's the position of interest from the fans on this team. Is like, how does that position get fixed for 2022? And so is he part of that solution?
I also think he would be interesting. This is one of those, again, I think you guys had mentioned, like, sort of talking to a player about other, what was it like in that room? So to ask mm-hmm. about what was it like when Dallas Gant left? What was it like when Kayvon Pope left? What's it been like with Taraja, who's a captain, and by the end of the year wasn't playing? What's it like with Neoteote and his injury and him trying to deal with all this stuff? What's it been like trying to watch Tommy Eichenberg and Cody Simon sort of seize their roles? Like, I think you could almost spin. I think there's a story that you could almost tell of a top 100 freshman in Ohio State's linebacker room and the year he never saw coming or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, you tell mm-hmm. the story of what happened in there through the eyes of basically the only guy who didn't play other than Mitchell Melton, who was hurt. And you understood why this is not like a shot at Reed right. Carrico. It's a true freshman. He shouldn't yes. be playing. But like, it's like, hey, I'm a freshman at Ohio State. Cool. And it's like.
And what does it tell us about what we should expect from the two true freshmen who are coming in next year?
Yeah. So I would be curious if Reed would have just like a good Reed would have Reed on the year in, which to your point, is of great interest to our listeners and readers.
Great pick. Great. You know, concept. He might be tough Borland, though, as far as a talker.
For real?
Yeah. I've had some good conversations with Tough Borland over the years, so I think it depends on the scenario. We'll see how that goes.
I actually, you picked him 10th. I had him exactly 10th on my list, so mm-hmm. I think it's a good pick here.
Next up for you, Doug.
So I'm going to have that third on my original list who's still here, and then who I wound up taking guys ahead of. So there are two guys that I am still really excited about that were in my 10 that are still available. And this guy, I think still counts as like a in the shadows, really has not done anything kind of guy who could have a much bigger role next year. I don't know if it's a kind of conflict, but I'm curious about progress and the path to his role, at least a little winded. It's not 100% clear. So I'm going to take Evan Pryor because we have talked about, hey, maybe Pryor should be the number two running back next year. What has his year been like? And I am making my list, intrigued by that. Had him third after the two quarterbacks. And then I kind of was like, I kind of want to talk about you. But I think there is a amount of interest, ability, talent, potential ability to contribute next year, and enough conflict to make me want to talk to him.
I think he's a good sleeper pick, which is why he shouldn't be hot, because it's like, he was always on a different plan than Travion, but now it's like that. It's time for that plan to kick in. Like the first year was yeah. clearly, I got to learn how to be an in-between the tackles running back because I really didn't have to do it very much while Travion is off being a superstar. And now it's time to go. And I had like a side conversation with Travion about that. And they've been really supportive of each other in that concept. And it's been part of the reason why this has worked is that no one's jealous of what the other one is doing. So I do like that concept.
Yeah, he would have been very high on my list of like first people I would hope that we get in the spring. I don't know if I needed to get him in this scenario, but the way you talk about it, Doug, I think it's probably wrong. I think he probably does need to be pretty high on this list because he could be the guy next year behind Trevion. Like we don't know, and it's that's what this is kind of all about. It's like how because that when I look at this list, I think of in terms of. What's a question a reader would have? What's a question one of our tech subscribers would have? What's a question they might be asking us next time we get a rapid fire? Like, is Evan Pryor ready to be the number two? Can he be the number two? And I'd like to go find out what Evan Pryor thinks about that. So I think that's a good pick. Steve, why don't you close us out with your fourth pick?
I'm not sure if I'm shocked he's still on the board or not, but Taliq Williams is second on his team in snaps and in sacks, and he barely played. And it always seemed like he should have had a bigger role than he had. And we have never talked to him.
He's on my list. Just didn't get around to him. But because mm-hmm. of that, because he had flashed so much and we had not really had access to him, he's definitely somebody that I thought one of us should probably get to.
But he's the second highest graded player on the roster and on the defensive side. And, I mean, we all thought JT and Jack would do something this year because of what they are, and they had roles. Mike Hall was probably next on the list. If you of the four defensive linemen, if you had to rank which one's going to have the biggest impact, you probably said Jack first because he's been working with Larry Johnson since he was five. JT second because he's JT. Mike Hall third because he's a top 50 recruit from Ohio. And then Talik Williams, he maybe just has to wait a year because he's the 166 player in his class. Except he had the most impressive year of the four. And he's a, you know, I mean, that came out of nowhere, and he didn't necessarily have the opportunities that especially JT and Jack had to do so.
On my list, I originally had 15 guys, and then I made my top 12. So he was not one of my top 12, but I think it's a good case all around. Like, you've been really good. And then, again, played more. Well, he's a true freshman. Sometimes when you're a true freshman, the reason not so high is because you're not playing too much and you're not getting exposed and you're not getting worn down. I think this is an acknowledgement of his contributions and letting him talk about how good he's been this year. And I think there's value, and I think people would want to read that and hear about it.
Agreed. So I tried to keep this realistic. Like, we'd each pick four because in the scenario we're talking about, oftentimes you don't even get to your fourth guy sometimes because time is constrained. But since this isn't really what we're picking here, who else? Who was like the next guy on your lists that didn't get picked?
Jackson. Five defensive lineman has nice little wrinkle roll as a blocking back in the goal line times, looking like a guy that we expect to compete for a starting job on the interior next year. Not a lot of conflict. Had a nice little true freshman. And will be expected in the spring to compete for a job. So not a lot of conflict, but big time dude who I all think is going to be a big time player here that I'm not sure
we did. Yeah. We talked to him in fall camp.
Okay.
And that's about it. Yeah. It's just more of a, hey, what's up here? The guy who's probably going to compete in the fall. And, you know, he's on track. He's on the Harry Miller, Paris Johnson track of year one, you're a backup, year two, you're a starter.
There isn't conflict today with him, but there's definitely a competition that's stirring with those interior spots. So it's not like he is conflicted in some way because he got demoted or he lost a job or whatever. He's the one coming up, but he's swimming into a conflict a little bit here.
Because our expectation would be that there's probably four guys for three spots on the interior it stands with Donovan Jackson, Matthew Jones, Luke Whippler, and Harry Miller. So, that could be interesting to see how that unfolds.
Jansen Dunn a little bit because they're obviously Josh Proctor, but Jansen Dunn, I think they didn't really have options outside of Bryson Shaw with free safety. And a lot of that was Josh Proctor got knocked out. And then Jansen Dunn was on and off the unavailability report all year. And that was a guy who flashed in the spring, flashed in the fall. They brought him in here. I remember talking to him during the recruiting process. They told him to be, they wanted him to watch Jordan Fuller film because that's exactly what they want them to be. And it's like, I mean, they didn't have options at free safety. They just had to kind of stick with Bryson Shaw and hope he grew in that role because this guy wasn't healthy enough to, you know, contribute.
There are a couple of guys in that just for sort of like for posterity that you almost want to check in with. One of them being Josh Proctor
on my list.
Are you coming back for sure? And how's the leg? Like there's a lot of things you can do with that. But if he comes back next year and you still got Bryson Shaw, then I don't know it affects the role of people like Jansen Dunn, Cameron Martinez, like where do those guys fit in? So I think that's an important one.
And I do think there's reflection in there. The idea of, hey, man, did you think if you were healthy, would you guys have won the Michigan game? Right. That kind of stuff which is, again, it's not earth shattering kind of stuff. But like some of the guys, it's like, hey, you were hurt and you didn't get to play. It's like, yeah, I was hurt. I'll get healthy and I'll try to play. Josh Proctor was playing, had a season ending injury. They put in his backup. Bryson Shaw actually graded out pretty high this year, but we talked about it a lot, you know. Not a great angle on the Blake Corum 55-yard run. Just like that emotional thing of he was maybe turning into a leader for a defense that in the end kind of wasn't good enough. He might, maybe would be open to like an emotional discussion about like this was driving me crazy kind of stuff.
You might be able to take it a step further. He got hurt pretty early on in that Oregon game before some of those big plays happened. So it's, Michigan game. Hey, would Ohio State be undefeated right now? Had you played? Like, that's real.
Would Ohio State be undefeated if Josh Proctor never got hurt is a pretty good headline, as you then talk to Josh Proctor about that idea.
Yeah. You know?
Along those same lines, like at some point, I mean, we get DeJuan Jones all the time, but get his impressions on what he's thinking as far as, because he's the one that I think is maybe the most impactful unknown NFL draft decision. Is that fair to say right now?
Yes.
If he were to make the jump, it affects things the most. It affects things more than like the people like even Seven Banks and Cam Brown, I would say, who we, you know, but if Jones leaves, then can one of those guys that we're talking about as four for three spots at guard, can one of them play right tackle? Could Harry Miller play right tackle? Like, it opens up a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's almost a conversation of, like, what was your thought process in this before you played Michigan? And did, like, Aiden Hutchinson single-handedly make you come back to Ohio State next year?
Well, but, like, the thing with DeJuan still is relatively raw, just because he didn't, as we've covered many times and written about, he didn't dedicate himself to football until like the middle of last year. That NFL decisions in the locker room of the Big Ten championship game, it's hard to get real answers on stuff.
Right.
But sometimes it's like, what's the point of even asking that question? Right. Because you're going to get an answer that doesn't mean anything. I think there's a way that you could ask that question of DeJuan Jones. Are you thinking about the NFL? That if he says, are you kidding me? Right. I've only learned like 20% of how to play right tackle. There's no way I'm leaving. That you could be like, oh, well, yeah. Oh, no, I actually believe that. And like, he thinks the discussion, which we are having, is ludicrous on the surface. That would be valuable. And so I think like there's an opening of like, I can imagine how you might get an answer that means something.
Yeah, I remember in the 2019 season, I think it was Spencer Holbrook from Letterman Row was the first one to get to Wyatt Davis and ask him like, are you thinking about the NFL? And Wyatt Davis immediately like, nope, I'm back next year. And like, so sometimes when you can get those guys and they're that far away from the decision, like for instance, Nicholas Petit-Frere, it's like in his face. Like if he's already decided it, he's probably not going to say it that night. Or like someone like Josh Myers was last year. I think it was like so present for them that it was so real that it could maybe either go either way. But asking someone where it really would seem to be almost a stretch in some ways, if they go, or they would have to be reaching a little bit. And I think he would qualify there. And maybe that's what I was thinking. Like he might shoot that down immediately. And now it's something you don't have to speculate on for the next few weeks.
And he also could say, you know what? I really felt like I came a long way this year. It's something I'm really going to have to think about. And then you'd be like, oh, dang, like this is real now.
Right. Anybody else you want to talk about before we sign off?
JT? JT
Tuilolo? Yeah, I was going to let's just kind of, because I was going to, you're going to say JT, I'm going to say Jack. I just think to the point of this is we're going to get them a lot over the next 2 years, but this might be the last time we get them before like there's 30 million people in their face all the time and we can't really like go off to the side with them. And JT, yeah, I think with Jack, something I said in the summer, the idea that he could be the modern day Mike Vrabel and like there's a way to tie in, like he just watched Aiden Hutchinson like do that kind of for Michigan. Be a guy from Michigan and like use all that motivation and all that, you know, emotion to basically win a game for Michigan in the Ohio State football rivalry. And then the idea of like there wasn't enough Ohio guys on the field. Well, Jack is that. And this is maybe the opportunity where you could sit down with him and have that 5-minute discussion with him when they're not Chase Young yet. You know what I'm saying? And I think this is like to that point with those two, this is the last time we get to do that because next year they might be out of here.
You know, the funny thing about it is, though, in this,
they're not going to be out of here. They're
you know what I mean? Like out of here as far as like now they're famous. And it's like,
But in this make-believe scenario, Ohio State wouldn't have lost the Michigan game, which would have changed a lot of the trajectory of questions and things that we would have asked some of these guys. They would have won that game and they would be playing for the Big Ten championship. I had Jack Sawyer higher on my list than JTT only because we got JTT. I guess
it's
we got
JT,
Jack
right? We've officially
just JT. It's either JT or it's Jalen Tuimoloau.
Well, we can call him JT Tuimoloau, but we don't call him JTT because there's actually not two T's, right?
Yes.
That was just, we like learned in the middle of the year.
Okay. I think does he still have JTT on like his social media accounts?
He does.
Anyway. Mr. Tuimoloau, I had Jack Sawyer higher just because I'm curious how he felt, how this season played out for him, where I think we had maybe our expectations were too high, but the impact wasn't as high as we had set it. So how does he feel about that? Like, how does he feel like this season?
It's the two sides of the same coin. I feel like JT had the impact we thought Sawyer would have.
Kind of, yeah.
And vice versa. That when in the Michigan game, I think we literally had this conversation about Jack Sawyer in the Michigan game. In the Michigan game, yeah. Zach Harrison and Tyreek Smith started. And when they put in the second team defensive ends, they put in Javonte Jean-Baptiste and a true freshman. But it wasn't Jack Sawyer. It was JT. So, like, to have both sides of that, I think, would make sense. Because the whirlwind of JT, hey, man, you got here, like, in July, and you played real snaps in the Michigan game and were really good this year. I think there's value to that as well. But also, not that Jack Sawyer was disappointing, but sort of how you phrased it, Nathan, that maybe – what we thought and what it was like, just the progress of that.
Well, and Jack Sawyer, you could argue, ended up having a season not terribly unlike the Chase Young freshman season. It's just that the Chase Young freshman season didn't have another true freshman jumping ahead of him,
right?
Whereas Jack's does, but that's just sort of coincidental. He still is on pace potentially to unfold in along the same lines.
There was like an X's and O's element that I think we all kind of, you know, overlooked when Larry Johnson explained, basically, when I asked him, like, why JT's playing more, it's because one's better at stopping the run and there's more opportunities to do that than there is to rush the passer, which is fine. Like, no one's disappointing. It's just if we'd have looked at it from that point of view and not just Jack's been here for 9 months already, maybe we would have had a different projection for how this was going to go.
I would not have, because I still would have leaned on one guy's been here for 9 months and one guy decided to be a Buckeye 2 weeks ago. So I think that for JT Tuimoloau to decision that late in the process, which is fine, but then contribute like he did as a true freshman is quite a credit to him. That is really quite a thing to pull off. We're talking about that Jacalyn Johnson and Jordan Hancock didn't play because Denzel Burke was here in the spring. JT didn't get here till July.
JT didn't even know he was coming until July.
Like, that is quite remarkable and some sign of what this guy might be, that he was able to flip the switch that quickly.
Do you have another one, Doug, before we
sign off? The only two other guys who were on my list on my top 15, Paris Johnson, because I like talking to Paris, and I think there's continues to be a real conversation to be had of, like, you weren't put on this earth to be a guard, and you played guard all year, and you were pretty darn good, and now it's your time to be tackled soon, and what's it been like? And we've had versions of that conversation with Paris sort of the year, but I like having that conversation with Paris. And I think he is smart and real and doing what the team wants him to do while willing to admit, like, this is not exactly, you know, what he would pick to do in an ideal world. And I always think those conversations are valuable. And then the last one is this, I wouldn't actually pick this guy, but Jake Seibert, like, we thought you were going to be the kicker and the transfer came in and then you weren't the kicker. And I don't know. Like, that conversation is a little bit too much like, man, this didn't work out, I thought, huh? Which is not a great thing for a 48-year-old person to ask a 20-year-old kid, because he already knows it didn't work out the way he wanted it to work out. And I'm not sure what to say, but
if Nicholas Petit-Frere comes back, would that be more or less shocking than Chris Olave coming back?
Less.
Yeah.
And if Nicholas Petit-Frere and DeJuan Jones both come back, what does Ohio State do with Paris Johnson Jr. next year?
Wish him well at USC. I don't know.
Yeah, no,
it's not worth having a conversation about, because they can figure it out when they get to that point. Hashtag too many good players. But, like, I don't know. They might have to tell Nicholas Petit-Frere to go, because Paris Johnson, doesn't matter how good you were, Paris Johnson deserves that left tackle spot next year.
Yeah, Nicholas Petit-Frere is done with school. He's been here 4 years. I don't think he's coming back. I'd be shocked if he came back. I think it might actually in some ways be even more surprising than Olave, because Olave was only 3 years. He still had another year. There were that factors into it a little bit, but
it's just that Chris was like a first round pick, and Chris,
yeah.
That's the thing. I don't think NPF's a first round pick, but from the standpoint of, like, you know, Chris coming back really didn't block anybody.
I mean, since somebody to Alabama, but
well, that's true.
So
no, yeah,
I'm not gonna, you know,
block him into another time zone.
We would ask Paris if he's just gonna pick up Jameson Williams' apartment lease in Tuscaloosa. I'm just kidding, but, like, Paris Johnson, the world
He needs to be
the
a left
world
tackle.
Cannot exist unless Paris Johnson plays tackle for a college football team next year. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, it's so that's the thing. I understand the question that you're asking. Actually, the Chris in a silo, I was more surprised about Chris coming back than I would be at MPF coming back from like their draft status standpoint.
Yeah.
But in terms of ramifications for the team, how the roster fits together, actually MPF coming back would be more of a shock to the plan of his position group.
That's going to do it for this fake draft that we threw together. We will have Ohio State intel to pass on to you this weekend. We are scheduled tentatively to get Ryan Day on Sunday after Ohio State's bowl situation is announced. Again, it'll probably be the Rose Bowl unless Iowa beats Michigan in the Big Ten championship game, and then things get a little bit sideways. Could be a Peach Bowl situation, opponent unknown, but somewhere in the New Year's Six situation. So when that happens, we are recording a podcast on Sunday, and we will give it to you on Sunday. You won't have to wait till Monday morning to get it. So we will turn that around fast and get you the thoughts on the bowl game, but also other things that Ryan Day will talk about, leftover stuff from the Michigan game and the direction of where some decisions are heading maybe and what's going on, the status of the program in general. So be listening for that on Sunday, late afternoon probably. Until then, I'm Nathan Baird. For Doug Lamorese and Stephen Means, that was Buckeye Talk.